That's Tito Puente with Tomas Cinco, take five. I just can't get enough variations of that one classic song, take five. But that's Tito Puente's interpretation, and I'm delighted to listen to it and to share it with you. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Tuesday, November the 26th, and being Tuesday, it is Open Forum Day. This is a day you get to take the conversation in your direction, wherever it is you want it to go. But let's have some very solid opinions offered today to cause people not only just to think, but possibly even change their minds about things. So much going on in the world today. But this is not my day to talk. This is my day to play traffic cop. I'm just regulating traffic today. And, of course, giving you a prod and a poke here and there to keep you in line and on topic. So 888-874-4888 is the number to call, and we can get our conversation started without any further loss of time. Harvey, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. Well, thank you very much for the show.
Thank you.
And how are you today?
I'm still wrestling with my tonsils.
Uh-huh. I recommend fresh turmeric, if you can get it. It sort of cleans the body out of all the pathogenic stuff. Fresh turmeric. That's the way to go.
Okay,
try it out. Okay, so I'd like to talk about the Keystone XL pipeline and why it's such a bad idea. And the pipeline transports this dirty tar sands from Alberta, Canada, down to Cushing, Oklahoma, and where the tar sands are mixed with a lighter crude and then pumped another 400 miles down to the Gulf of Mexico, and where it's refined, stored, and put on ships for sale to the highest bidder. And we saw the devastation that the Typhoon Haiyan did in the Philippines on television. Those typhoon winds were 200 miles an hour, and you saw what happened there. And we just witnessed the 80 tornadoes that trashed the Midwest. The winds were between 170 and 190 miles per hour. Well, in Cushing, Oklahoma, it turns out that Cushing, Oklahoma itself is an endless horizon of giant steel storage tanks holding 50 to 65 million barrels of crude oil. It's a spiderweb of pipelines, pumps, compressors, and terminals, and it sits in Tornado Alley. And May 31st, 2013, not that long ago, the El Reno, E-L-R-E-N-O, whoever wants to look it up, the El Reno tornado was moving through the area going toward Cushing, but it veered off. And it was the largest tornado they ever had. The winds exceeded 296 miles an hour, almost 300 miles an hour. And it was 2.8 miles wide. 300 miles an hour. A 737 takes off at 165 miles an hour. You can imagine what 300 miles an hour winds would do to all the storage tanks in Cushing. In fact, you can look, there are articles based on that. Like, there's one article, I think it's called What Would Happen If a Tornado Went Through Cushing. And they're completely unprepared. So this is the weak link in the Keystone XL pipeline. And really, the more I research it, the more I realize that all of that can be destroyed in a minute. And I'm not even talking about the pipelines or how vulnerable they are. This is just about tornadoes. Also, Cushing happens to be not far from a major fault line. And in 2009, they had about 50 earthquakes. And in 2010, they had over 1,000 because of all the fracking. So Cushing is not only vulnerable from above, it's vulnerable from below. And
but,
so I
but
say,
the construction of the pipeline has already begun.
I know that.
What is your position? It has already begun.
The deal hasn't been concluded yet. There are several more phases to the deal. And I say Who's going to insure? This is a disaster waiting to happen on every level. And so I say it has to be looked at again, considering the El Reno tornado and the fact that it's in Tornado Alley. This is such a bad idea, Utrecht. Such a
right.
bad idea.
I'm trying to understand, though. Are you aware that it already is a hub for pipelines and transporting oil of different levels, crude and processed? It's already a town with pipelines zipping all through it. The Keystone Pipeline is a pipeline that should carry oil from Canada into Cushing.
That's right.
Okay. So are you opposed to the whole thing, whether it is the network of pipelines already there or the Keystone project itself?
Well, the Keystone project itself, there's a lot of the infrastructure already there. Cushing actually calls itself the pipeline capital of the world. It's mm-hmm. a repository of basically of America's oil, but it used to be used to ship actually northward during the winters for heating and all that, but now it's all going south and going to be loaded on ships for sale to the world. So it's a kind of a place that's just sitting in harm's way. And the funny thing is, Utrecht, is that it's the burning of the very product they're trying to ship, petroleum, that has caused excess CO2 in the atmosphere and created this, what they call a greenhouse effect. And when the greenhouse effect heats up the oceans, lakes, and rivers, which create more evaporation, which gives rise to larger tornadoes, hurricanes, and typhoons. So the very product they're trying to ship could be the demise of it could be the burning of the very product they're trying to ship. So
what's the alternative in your view?
Solar energy. The sun has enough energy to power the Earth, I don't know the exact number, but way more than we need every day, every minute. I mean, it's just a tremendous amount. And it's photovoltaic solar panels. The key here is that photovoltaic or solar panels use no water. Once manufactured, they use no water in the generation of clean, renewable electricity. So I say we got to get star powered. We got to plug into the sun, plug our cars, our homes into the sun.
Yes, but at the same time, I mean, in an economy the way it is right now, major segments of the economy are depending on various types of fuel because the world hasn't gone fully solar yet. It hasn't gone fully electric. It hasn't gone fully anything. So the people who have invested very heavily in the oil business, the oil refining business, this they see as being a viable sector for quite some time, because they're thinking, look, there's a lot of reserves, oil available all over the United States, you know, the same way they used to think about coal. It is going to be some time before the entire continent, North American continent, is fully anything, solar or whatever it is, but security sake, some would argue, you need a mix of fuels. You need a mix of ways to power engines and so forth. So if it's not a pipeline, they'll bring in the oil by truck, they'll bring it in by railroad, but they are not about to stop using oil. So the question really is, I mean, I appreciate your argument. I agree that, you know, we should move toward a more efficient use of our resources, and major consideration should be given to the environmental impact of certain industries. And I mean, if you drive through, I don't know if you have driven through certain parts of New York or even in Louisiana, you just simply can't breathe because of all that oil emission and the burn off even stifles you. So the question is, it's not just what is an efficient alternative. The challenge, it seems to me, is how do you assist. What is the argument? What is the credible argument to this sector that has invested so heavily in this one way of providing and harvesting fuel, let's say? How do you tackle them and convert them and propose something that is a win-win for them?
The first step is in, educating the public, because the public are the investors in stocks and various instruments. They invest in these technologies. I'm actually calling for a divestment from away from oil into renewables, and that's it. I think it's education all the way. You know, I call them the four horsemen of the apocalypse: coal, oil, nuclear, and natural gas. Each of them is implicated in CO2 production, poisoning the groundwater, radioactive releases. I mean, there's no end of fracking. There's no end of these guys, like, killing our planet. And I call that the old technology, the fossil-based technology. And we have to go to the new technologies, the star-based technologies, and that's solar. And I think that people have a lot of ideas, but these companies that seem to have all the money, the coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear, they've stymied every new force, every new form of energy that's come on, as much as they can, because they don't want to lose any market share. So we have to educate the public first, and I don't know. That's the way to go if we want to see a future for us and our children. Because otherwise,
I agree with you.
It's all gone.
I think, though, I mean, just the same. I think the challenge is in talking to the established order. You know, what is the incentive to persuade them to see that they could make profits even if they switched? You know, the thing that has always been a little bit tricky is that when somebody says, well, you're doing something and that we don't want you to do that anymore, okay, so what is the alternative? You have to give them an incentive, and this is where I think progressives are a bit lacking. What I mean is that it's important, it's equally important to suggest what alternatives are and to work within a certain parameter. You can't, for example, let's say everybody in the United States was using oil. Because so many segments of the economy are revolving around that you can't just say, well, you should stop using oil and use water instead. Therefore, it will be a process where if you are presenting the alternative, you have to make a credible argument about how it would be beneficial to them, the changes they could make to get into this new market by transferring their skills and their acumen and their marketing and all the things that they do currently to make money. Give them a vision of how they could make money with the other alternative. That's what I mean.
Yes, it's interesting you say that, oil and instead use water to make energy, because that's exactly the case. You know, you put solar panels on your rooftop and use the water you can use the electricity to perform electrolysis of the water. The water breaks down into hydrogen and oxygen, and the hydrogen can be put through a fuel cell and create electricity. And the byproduct is water vapor, because it recombines with oxygen, and the byproduct is water vapor. It's a very innocent action. So there we can get our electricity from water, using solar energy for electrolysis and then fuel cells. Let them invest in fuel cell companies. I don't know I don't have the specific answer, but there's many technologies just waiting, clean, renewable technology.
But this is where the argument needs to go. The argument is to present a workable, pragmatic, and attractive alternative. Because it will simply become, we don't want you to use oil anymore, and basically you want to shut down the oil industry. And so, well, you know, that is, you know, what I'm saying is the argument has to come at a different level. And we are clear that certain environmental hazards simply should not continue because they're now having a lethal impact on the community. So the discussion ought to be, to me, how does an industry that has been functioning for how many years now with this particular model, this is how they've made money, this is how they do still make money, this is how they intend to make money in the future, and they have this thing down to a science. How do you think you're going to persuade these folks to just turn off the lights and go home and say, okay, well, they want us to switch, are we not ready? They have to be educated, and there has got to be a dialogue working in these two major segments. But you brought enough stuff again for us to consider today, Harvey. Thank you so much for contributing. Thank you. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We are taking your calls today. Mind, just don't pay attention to my voice. It's going all over the place right now. But basically, you can tell what it is I'm trying to say. I'm resisting the urge to introduce a topic, but I want to hear from you. 888-874-4888. The dialogue in any form of opposition, and I think this is one of the weakest points, I think, with the opposition, is that we have to engage in dialogue at a particular level. That doesn't mean that people are going to listen. You know, they're just going to turn you off sometimes. But it isn't enough to say no, or it isn't enough to say I'm against such and such. The question is, what's a working alternative? And we're seeing that playing out in Washington, D.C. now. One side says, this is the way it's got to be. And the only thing left for the other side to say is no. And there's no dialogue. You know, if the Obamacare position is, this is the way it has to be, and there is going to be no discussion about anything, you will provoke the other side to say, you know, take a walk. That's what you want, and now our job is to just simply resist what you want. There's got to be a way to facilitate an intelligent discourse so that people can see, you know, you have to make a credible argument. You have to make a credible argument. Why should people invest in an alternative? Why should they care about an alternative? And then you have to make the argument about, look, you could make money. You could provide jobs. There's a market, a growing market. The way of the world is going to be XYZ. This is the picture of the future. Where do you want to fit in? These are the kinds of arguments you want to get. And I find that very often we just stop at the idea that we say, no, we don't like it. We don't want it. We don't like it. And then, but you say, well, what's your plan? And we don't have a plan. We just know that we're against it. Hello, DX. You're on the air.
Hello, you trees. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. See, this is the point. I'm going to comment on Harvey. Was this Harvey? Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to comment on what he said, and then I'm going to try to make my point on a different matter. But this is what I was saying about a lot of times people on the left, we just deal in facts. We just think if you just tell people something and it's true, and no disrespect to Harvey, he's a very intelligent guy, but you have to appeal to some kind of base or instinct, and that's exactly what you're saying is basically these companies operate on greed. And this is the model they've been using for, I think, 70, 100 years now, so what's going to make them change? Mm-hmm. You know, so it has to be more than just lay the facts out and educate the public because as we see, you know, the facts don't matter to these people. And as far as incentives, if the fact that you're going to destroy the only home that humankind has as for right now, I mean, to this point, in the universe, is an incentive enough? I mean, doesn't that tell you something? You see what I'm saying? So it has to be more than just laying out the facts. And I think that's what you're getting at, and that's what I say all the time, is that there has to be some sort of not only explanation of the facts, but you have to appeal to some baser instinct. In this case, it would be greed.
Yeah, because yeah. That position is, whether you like it or not, we are well situated the way we are, and we can continue like this for another 100 years and continue to make money for another 100 years. We don't have to bother with.
So why would we want to change? Exactly.
Things are working just fine.
Right.
So the onus is on the opposition to say, look, here is how you could. Here's the future. Here's what the future looks like. Do you want to situate yourself advantageously in mm-hmm. that market, that future market?
Right.
If so, these are the things we think you ought to do now.
Right.
And not so, that they would listen.
Not that they would listen, but that's a more compelling argument than just, we don't want you to use Big Biggest Oil up anymore, so we got to do something. You know, that's a more compelling argument, because at least you're appealing to their instinct of wanting to make money and wanting to be in the forefront of a whole new industry. I mean, but what I was calling about, just to change gears a little bit, is I've been very, very disturbed and dismayed at a lot of these people on the left who are going in hook, line, and sinker now with this ACA. And some people, I'm not surprised. I mean, for instance, okay, a couple of weeks ago, I called in to KPFK, which is the Pacifica affiliate out here in Los Angeles. And they were having a show where they listened to the listeners. And I just called in and I said, basically, that there were certain shows that appear on KPFK or aired on KPFK that are not supportive of the pacifist notion that Pacifica was founded on. And I gave a few examples. Like I was saying that, you know, the guy Ian Masters, who has a show that comes on there, and Earl Afari Hutchinson's show, and Tom Hartman. I made the point that these are Democratic Party loyalists. And I also said that Pacifica was founded on the principles of a pacifist, Mr. Lou Hill, who didn't believe in war in any form, shape, fashion, no matter who was proposing it. But these particular shows, in the beginning of the Libya invasion, they fully supported it. They were on the side of Mr. Obama doing this. And I said, these shows, they always just go along with the Democratic Party line, and we don't need that. That shouldn't be on Pacifica, especially when they're supporting war. And I was just stonewalled, basically. They knew I had a good point, but they just didn't respond to it, really. And then a couple of people called afterwards saying that there's so much right-wing talk out there. And that wasn't my point. My point was, this is Pacifica. And I believe that Gary Noel was asked to be more involved with Pacifica recently. Straighten me up if I'm wrong, but I think he turned them down. And I believe some of this stuff that I'm pointing out here is probably some of the reason why, because I've been listening to Gary a long time, and he's true blue. He does not waver. He doesn't support any of that nonsense. And so my point is that, what do we do with these faux liberals and Democratic Party supporters on the left that are now trying to convince us that this ACA is a good thing, and we should just work with it because we can make it better, when actually the dang thing should be repealed and should start all over and have what we really want? So now they're talking as if they only highlight the good parts of it, and they don't say what the bad parts of it are, and they're encouraging people to go sign up. And I even heard one preposterous show that was saying that they had a guy on there, one of the hosts of the show, I can't remember the show, he was saying that he went to the website and it was very easy, and he found out that he was, you know, going to save this much money. And I mean, ran totally contrary to what's really going on. It was just a bunch of hogwash. And then the other host of the show was telling people that that it's a good thing, and then people are going to have insurance that that they didn't have before, which may be kind of true. But then he was saying that the people who are complaining, most of the people who are complaining about they couldn't keep their current insurance, you know, in this latest wrinkle in it where Obama had to apologize, that people who were saying they couldn't keep their insurance, what actually happened is the insurance policy they had before didn't match up to the standards of the ACA, so then they had to get dropped, but the policy they got now is better. And I don't, that's like a, you know, so what I'm asking you, maybe you can comment on it. What do we do with these people that are dirtying up our message on the left and basically carrying water for the Democratic Party? Because a lot of people listen to these people, and I think it hurts us. I really do. I think it hurts us.
I mean, I'm for people having their opinions about something, but I am pretty sure, because I haven't been able to read the act.
Right.
I defy anybody to tell me they've actually read it.
Right.
Including the legislators who voted for it.
Exactly.
Okay. So they don't know what's in it.
They don't know what's in it. So why are they sitting here telling people, especially people who listen to KPFK? And this is why I also told them when I called in that I'm withdrawing away from listening to KPFK as much, and I'm getting my information from other sources like PRN, which I believe is a wonderful for true blue people on the left who believe in these principles that we believe in and are not willing to waver. I think PRN is the best source out there for information right now. And
but, you know, it's a thing that people have. If I commented about it before, that I get so tired now, because if I switch to one channel, I know it's going to be all Democratic Party. Switching
right.
Other words, all Republican Party. You know,
right.
And we've gotten into this silly dichotomy where you either think as the Democrats do or as the Republicans do. It's as if you
right.
have no mind of your own,
your
no
own,
brains
exactly.
of your own. The interesting thing about the ACA is clearly not even the president has read it.
Right.
It's thousands of pages.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a long time to get through War and Peace. So imagine. Imagine.
And that would be a much more interesting read. I'm convinced of that.
But nobody has actually read this bill. And I can't wait for a very frank interview where any Democrat is, or any even Republican, asks him, have you actually read this bill?
Right.
Have you read the entire bill? Do you understand what's in it? They haven't gotten a briefing on it. They haven't seen it. They haven't discussed it in committee. They just were told, look, the vote is going down close to midnight. You better get there and just vote. Just up and down party lines, just vote.
Right.
And that's it. As Nancy Pelosi said, vote for it so that we could find out what's in it.
But the point I'm making,
that's the level they're talking about.
The point I'm making, too, is that in the mainstream media, we already have enough people. I mean, like you said, you're either for it or against it. You know, MSNBC is already, you know, pushing people to do this and go register. And then stations like KPFK in particular, I'm just picking on them today, but there are other stations that are supposed to be more progressive and really tell the truth about things. And they have these shows where people are just making up stuff. I mean, just like Fox. You know what I mean? I mean, so it gets mixed in with our message, and I think it hurts us. And I think when people hear stuff like that, they ought to point it out, call into the station, whatever they need to do to say, hey, look, this right here isn't right. You know what I mean? And what really got me now, too, is I listen to Smiley and West every week. Dr. West is one of my probably the leading intellectual, black intellectual, if not intellectual, in the country right now. And Mr. Smiley, he has bona fides too. I mean, he's done things, and we, you know, I like him too. But now they're even starting to say, well, you know, the affordable characters, what we have, and we have to work with that, and we can make it better and all this stuff. And I love these two guys, but I don't understand why they're doing that. I mean, tell the truth about what's going on, what's wrong with it too.
You know, there's a lot of stuff going on. One of the things is the isolation. People think that in taking opposition to something that is supposed to be popular or comes from an administration that is supposed to be popular and hip and forward-thinking, that they could stand being out in the cold only for so long.
Right.
There was a point when Smiley and West were very on point, and they were
right. They
were hitting the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the isolation has gotten to them, and they have been sidelined. So it's a way of saying, well, look, we're not the rabid enemies that people have made us out to be, because they didn't get a lot of flack from the African-American community
and certainly
from the establishment. And sometimes, you know, that stuff can wear on you if you don't have the kind of guts that, let's say, an Walter Maddox has, where he's expecting to be alienated by the mainstream for taking his positions. But in some places that can wear on people, and you know, they begin to soften the tone a bit. But the basic thing still is, I am waiting for somebody who can tell me that he or she has read the Affordable Care Act, the thousands of pages comprising this act.
I don't think anybody has ever done that.
That's what I'm waiting. I just want somebody to tell me, yes, they've read everything.
Yeah. But don't you think, okay, so Smiley and West, back to them, not to pick on them, but they've been one of the best shows when it comes to truth-telling, because, you know, Dr. West, he doesn't hold his tongue, neither does Mr. Smiley most times. They've been truth-telling about the president, about, you know, the Libya invasion, all these things about Summers and Geithner and all this, the financial institutions, the banks, they've been all the way up to this point. Now, why on this particular thing, you know, I don't understand. I just don't get why we have to do that to ourselves, and it's like we shoot ourselves in the foot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very telling, because when West was, particularly West, was so strident, I mean, he took quite a few hits. And with Obamacare, we are finding that the so-called liberal media, I mean, they are dogmatic and ideologists all the way. They have no appetite for anybody who disagrees. So even the friends like West are being, you know, systematically squeezed out of the circle.
And you know what?
And it could tell on them for a while.
You know what? The thing I respect about you so much is that you're willing to take a position on something that doesn't necessarily line up with everything people might say, but it seems to make a lot of sense when you give your point of view. Because like on the Snowden thing, you brought me around to a few things by just your persuasive arguments about this guy. And I started to look into it, because at first no one was really talking that way about Mr. Snowden, not to change the subject too much, but I'm just giving an example of how, you know, your independent thinking has helped me. I thought, hey, before I listened to you speak on it, I was like, oh, the guy's a hero. You know, he's this and that, and he's the best thing to come along since. And also on Julian Assange. But then I started thinking about some of the things you were saying about how these people are narcissistic, and there's something else up here with Snowden and all that, and it made me look into it more. And I have changed on a couple of things I thought in the beginning. So I really appreciate that. And that's the thing that I like so much about you.
Well, thanks. I think it is important not whether people agree or disagree with what you say, but whether they could appreciate the integrity of your argument. I'm all for people having all kinds of views.
Right.
But let me hear what brought you to where you stand. What was your journey to your ultimate conclusion? And I would respect that all the way. Because we can't have a society where we all agree now.
Exactly.
We all think alike, we all agree. We need people to present information for us in a way that causes us to say, well, you know what? That's pretty interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Right, exactly. And that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Because even though I haven't changed everything I thought about those two situations, it did make me tweak my thinking a little bit. And that's kind of how, you know, I want to say all talk show hosts should be, but it's just a good quality to have, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your call. Thanks so much. Thank you. 888-874-4888. You are taking the conversation where you want it to go. This is important, to have the ability to exchange views and not necessarily to for the sake of just disagreeing, but we talk to each other to really plumb the depths of the thinking that went behind your conclusion. Hello, Eric. You're on the air.
Oh, hey, Utrice.
How you doing?
Thanks for the show. I'm good. How are you?
I'm hanging in here.
I wanted to make a comment on what you and Harvey were talking about. I think that the people that are causing this destruction, there are alternatives, and they've been presented. There's plenty of scientists that have presented different alternatives, you know, up to what we know about the electric car and different, you know, the car run on water that they've you know, eliminated from the market. So these options are there. These people, I think that, you know, it's really... This is why I keep saying that people are just going to have to lose so much that they get fed up, because these people, we have to change our frame of mind when thinking about what these people are willing to do. They have no need to continue creating all the destruction they're creating. You know, they have all the profits they could imagine, you know? So I think it's a form of insanity what they're doing. What does Shell have to gain? What do all of these people have to gain? They're getting record profits, you know? So
remember,
the destruction...
About a week or so ago, I was talking a week or so ago about zero-sum thinking.
Yeah.
And in this field, you have that kind of thinking, you know, in the same way that they think there is a balance when my success is directly related to your failure, or mm-hmm. my wealth is related to your poverty. Mm-hmm. This is the same thing. In a society, and I talked about how you measure the quality of life in any society with mm-hmm. respect to the access that people have to strategic resources.
Mm-hmm.
In the minds of people in that business or in any other business, but let's talk about the oil business,
mm-hmm.
they have meticulously put together that sector of the economy. And it is predicated on this one idea, and that is there is a lot of oil, and if I don't get it, somebody else will. They're thinking about the billions of gallons that are just under the surface over here, and there's oil if we can start drilling in the ocean, and there's more oil in Haiti.
Is that if the rest of us choose to continue in their frame, you know, their frame of, you know, they have a monopoly on energy, and they're going to dictate what they want. And if we want anything else, then we're going to have to kind of dangle this carrot in front of them and provide them with an alternative. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think – because it's not because they need more, you know. They're doing it for domination. I think is more of a sociopathic and insanity. You know, I think it's something psychological that makes people, these people, for example, you look at people like, you know, Bloomberg, you look at people like Romney, what do they have to gain by trying to dominate more?
They get more. You know? And after you
exactly.
want some.
But that's insane because the more that they're getting, they will never enjoy and their children won't enjoy because they're destroying the planet. So if they don't recognize that, I think they're insane.
They
and
absolutely
more
recognize
and more
it.
We see that.
They recognize it, but they also have built a rationale for their greed. And the
but
rationale is.
The rationale doesn't make any sense.
It makes sense to them. That's why they're in the business. It makes perfect sense to them.
And
if
that's
not,
the insanity. That's the insanity that I'm talking about. Because it can make perfect sense to them, but the rest of the world doesn't think so. Just because they dominate the market doesn't mean that we have to continue, you know, treating them like they're the experts. And if we don't capitulate or if we don't present them with an alternative, then they won't let us. It's kind of like what the bankers are doing. You know, if we don't present them with more money and quantitative easing, then they'll make the whole world collapse. Well, let them try.
No,
because
but there's another part
of
it.
I don't think that's...
There's another part of it. It's not just to convince them. It is also about convincing people to change their habits.
And that's my point. They're going to have to lose. And, you know, all of these tornadoes in the Philippines. You see, the thing also about you know, that my wife was pointing out about the Philippines and some of these other places. You know, these things have been going on in different places. You know, you hear about what happens in Africa. You hear, you know, all of these atrocities, and people just kind of sit on their hands. You know, you hear about what's happening in Italy and Greece and all those. The things have been happening. The you know, inability to provide food, shelter, water for decades. And when we complain about it, when we want a solution. And when we want self-determination, you know, we've been squashed and nobody has anything to say. Now it's happening worldwide. And now it's a big, you know, horrible story and everybody has to deal with it. No, you know, because there's different pockets of the world where this has been happening for decades and decades. And those are the places that they went and destroyed first, you know. So now the rest of the world is feeling the repercussions, but why does it have to come to that? You know, so and my conclusion is that people are just, they will not change. They just have to lose so much that it forces them to see something different because they live in a fantasy. You know, so it's a collective refusal to look at what's happening.
Equally mad? Is that where we are equal?
I think so. Because, you know, I'm studying psychology and I'm in class. And I'm in my classes full of professors who continue to talk about, oh, let's invest in Wall Street, who continue to tell the young people about how, you know, there's no problem with GMO food. There's no problem with vaccine. And, you know, you just look at what's available. And then, I mean, in one of my classes the other day, we were having a discussion on, if you were Bloomberg, you know, what could you do in the school system? Or what could you do to make things better for the people in the ghettos, for the people in the projects, and the people that have, you know, that feel like they have no future in society? You know, and these people are coming up with more studies. Well, how many hundreds of thousands of studies do you need? You know?
Again.
How many studies? We keep studying the thing to death, and it's, you know, there's nothing that comes out of any of the studies because the conclusions that are drawn are not adhered to. Nobody cares about the conclusion. We just keep studying and discussing. It doesn't make any sense, you know?
I keep saying it. We really have to understand this zero-sum concept.
Mm-hmm.
And it mm-hmm. all the strategic resources in the thinking of zero-sum, you know,
mm-hmm.
zero-sum thinking is, and this is the one lesson that the Occupy movement absolutely brought home. This is
mm-hmm.
how bizarre it is. 1% over here with all that money
mm-hmm.
is equal to the 99% over here. There is no way mathematically that that could be equal, you know?
And it's only equal, I believe, because the rest of the 99%, our large majority of the 99% are looking at that 1%, and they want to be them. They want to be that 1% because they would not tolerate it if it wasn't for that. They keep telling you about upward mobility. You work hard and you can achieve. You can get to where I'm at. If, you know, Bloomberg is going to, I was poor once and you can be where I'm at. I mean, that's the fantasy that people really want to believe. They don't see how much the decks are stacked against, the chips are stacked against them. They want to be that.
It is not that they
want to
believe it, Eric. It is not that they want to believe it. It is part of the formula. You have to take on this kind of thinking. The reason we have poverty is because of poor people. I mean, that's the lopsided kind of thinking. The reason we have homelessness is because we have homeless people. It's the people. The fault is with the people. If it weren't for the fact that, you know, we have poor people, we would have eradicated poverty. It's bizarre thinking. But this is the way they think.
That's the twisted thinking. And the other thing is, imagine, like, you see, a lot of people like to talk about poor people, how lazy they are, how they don't get up and work. Does anybody in New York see these people walking around cans at all kinds of times of the morning, evening, you know, night, with our garbage? You know, they're walking around and they're going to go recycle or put the cans and bottles into something and get a little, a few cents out of it. You know, imagine if there was something for them to do. You think they wouldn't do it? So this idea that poor people are the reason, they're their own, you know, worst enemy and all that kind of, it's so twisted. It blows my mind when you think about how much of these traps people fall into. When the evidence is in front of you, if these people had a job, they will go do it and they will do it very well because they're willing to wake up and go collect bottles and cans. So why do we think that, oh, that's their problem? No. You know? But unfortunately, there's so few people that are willing to look at it for what it is, and it's tragic.
Well, you've made your point. Thanks so much. Yeah, you made your points plural today. Thank you, Eric, for calling. 888-874-4888. We certainly can take, one more call before we go. But it is important to talk. This is education, and everybody learns by bringing their thoughts to the gathering place here for our inspection. And we serve as tutors to each other when we share this kind of information in this way. And it's important because, you know, if you listen to just a few calls that we've taken and the breadth of the thinking and the rationales for thinking, you get a sense, it's very hopeful actually, that you get a sense that despite all of the problems out there, there are people who are thinking. They're not easily fooled. They are able to put two and two together. They get it. They understand it. And what we need to do is to propagate this kind of population, to create more and more people who think before they act, who take a look at things. Yusuf? Oh,
yes,
sorry, Michelle.
Patrice.
Sorry, Michelle from California. Excuse me.
Hello.
Michelle, you there?
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
Hi, Patrice.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. And you?
Well, I'm one of your big fans for many, many years.
Oh, thank you.
From WBAI, the Progressive Radio Network.
Thank you.
Okay.
What are you contributing today?
I'm happy you're back, anyway. The point that I wanted to make you, Trish, is that we are dealing with the biggest catastrophe the world has ever faced. And why is it that most of the media is not talking about it? And right now, I don't think nothing else matters if everything collapses. You know, and because the most knowledgeable scientists in the world, even the regular media like ABC, BBC, CBS, they are saying there's a big chance that Fukushima is melting. And when it does, it will be 14,000 times leaching of radiation that was 14,000 times Hiroshima bomb inside of that plant. And the radioactive that's inside of the plant, it's not just 14,000 times Hiroshima, but it's also, you know, a bunch of other chemicals like plutonium, cesium, 137, and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And what you know, most of the media is not talking about it. Even Progressive Radio Network, KPFK, WBAI, they should make it like a priority of waking up people. Because we are, as journalists, leaders. You know, you are a huge leader. So when we talk about everything else, I'm not saying they're not important, but this is like a priority. I am in California right now, and David Suzuki is a scientist, a well-known, very well-respected scientist. He said there's a 95% chance of Fukushima melting, and when it does, it's going to be bye-bye Japan. And it's on ABC News. It's regular news on ABC News. And if there is, I'm in California. California is going to be, he said California is going to have to be evacuated. And Helen called the cop, you know, Michio Kaku, and everybody is talking about it. And I have to take it very seriously. But when I'm opening the radio and, you know, it's about, like, Obama care or something else, to me, this is urgent. I need to know what to do, what to take, and what's my best option to save my life. Because right now, I'm like in a limbo. What do I do? Do I go east? Do I go south? So that, I don't know if you will be able to give me these answers.
Well,
but I try to.
The thing is that everybody feels this, you know, overwhelmed by all the things that are wrong, and you literally have to, I mean, it is crazy that there are so few people and so much to say. And the people who are in a position to say things are constrained because of the political ideologies within the companies that they work for. You know, they have to toe the line. And they are driven by ratings, and some of these subjects, frankly, are considered very boring, and so they don't think they'll get that many viewers or listeners, so they don't run these programs. And at other times, they will devote an inordinate amount of time to these programs if there is a competitive prize to be won, you know, to submit it for some kind of an Emmy or, you know, some journalistic award. This is how it happens. With the same ferocity that they covered, you know, the typhoon, you'd notice in a couple of days they're done with that. They're onto something else. So this is the nature of the business. It is driven by money. And, you know, on any given day, people who are working journalists have to deal with how overwhelmed they are. They can't write every story that needs to be written. They can't shoot every newscast that needs to be done. And this is the quagmire we all are in. Too much stuff and too little manpower. And too little interest, actually. Thanks, Michelle, for calling. Hello,
hello.
Yusuf.
Hello, Yutrice.
How are you? You have about a minute, but what I'm going to urge you to do is you can certainly continue the conversation with me on leadstories@gmail.com. Okay? So get started. You can still start your point.
Okay, great. I was calling about the Iran deal that was just announced over the weekend. And I've been listening to different shows, and they're talking about the bomb making and the potential bomb, but I haven't heard anyone talk about Iran being able to put the oil on the world market and that driving the price of oil down, more so than Saudi Arabia and the other oil-producing countries in the Middle East lining up with Israel about security. I think it has more to do with oil being put on the market. And like I said, I haven't heard anyone discussing the oil point in this whole deal.
Well, it's a very strong point that you raised. The thing is, we don't know quite yet what has been negotiated. You may recall, I don't know if you've been listening back that while ago, where there was this report that I found circulating that said this was quite a while ago, actually, that Hillary Clinton had an airplane issue that caused her to bump her head, and she was supposed to be on her way for the secret meeting in Iran, and everybody denied it. It seems to make sense now as you see what the developments are. But we don't know what has been worked out yet, so we just have to wait and see what the terms of this agreement turn out to be. We have no clue. But continue the conversation. You know, write me a note, leadstories@gmail.com, and we'll finish up our conversation online.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you so much for calling in today. We come back to each other tomorrow. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Economic Update with Richard Wolff. Thanks.